You had no say as to that part of your destiny, and you will leave the earth life under the same dominion nature, and you cannot change the destiny nature has marked out for you. Nature's mode of reform is development. What is the use of pictures to a person who cannot see, or of descriptions to those who cannot understand? The description of the higher spiritual spheres, even if it were given by one of the highest spirits, would be unintelligible to mortal mind. It affords me pleasure and joy unspeakable to know that I am still a man and can disclose in my weak way to some on earth the great fact that life continues, and that mere theories cannot stand out successfully against eternal fact. I was ignorant and weak when I came into this unknown country, and was not prepared to advance, until I had learned here what I should have known before. What you have gained, what you need will be yours in the spirit spheres. There is the closest love and quickest sympathy between the earth plane and the spirit world, but we cannot make you understand what our lives really are, without becoming exact counterparts of each other. You will each find a different home, suited to you and your work. Your sphere now lies upon the earth plane, and it is for you to perform the duties allotted to you. You may not be able to give the ignorant learning or the hungry food, but you can inspire their spirits to nobler and better deeds, while someone else, who is able, provides food and shelter. Let them feel that they have your love and sympathy, and let them see that, even if the clouds of adversity hang low, your soul is able to ascend to higher spheres. It is good to know that you do not travel the stony path of life alone, to feel that, no matter how rough or dark the way may grow, you can, if you will, stretch forth your hand and feel an answering clasp, a clasp that makes your heart grow braver. The Creator seems so far away to most that, unless they can have the love and help of each other, they feel deserted. It will always be impossible for the finite to grasp the infinite. There are thousands who walk secure in the consciousness of leaning on the strong arm of the Lord when, in reality, they are cheered and guided by some unseen friend. It is this spirit that gives to them the feeling of sympathy and strength that so ably assists them through life. The inhabitants of the spirit world are not bound by dogmas or creeds, that is, those who have been there long enough to get rid of their earth ideas, and they go forth to do good wherever they find opportunity. The main thing is to be honest with yourself, and just to others. Your ideas of good today may not be the same tomorrow. Therefore, do not attempt to lay down a rule for your friends to follow. Let each be a law unto himself. For each must answer for his own actions and not for the actions of others. It is not what a man does that makes him great, but what he is. Action is merely thought dressed in visible garb. Being must ever precede doing. In this manner I answer the two questions so often propounded. Chapter 18 From Death's Sleep. By what right do you presume to compel my presence in this house? The room was in absolute darkness, the voice of one called by the world, dead, trembling with anger, broke upon the stillness of the night. Do you understand the situation in which you find yourself? I asked. I do not, and will not allow any man to dictate to me, he replied. You are not afraid? I said. Afraid? I am not afraid of God or man, and I will not remain here. It might be to your advantage if you would, I answered. I did not force you to come. You are as much a stranger to me as I am to you. Who did force me to come? He asked. I do not know, tell me about it. As it comes to me now, he answered, an irresistible force seemed to urge me from a dreamlike condition. Suddenly I was awake, in your presence, and immediately concluded that in some manner you controlled my conduct. That I cannot permit. You are mistaken there, but does it not occur to you that some great good may come of this meeting? I inquired. I cannot in any way understand your suggestion, the stranger said, or see how any good can come of an enforced conference. If you did not bring me, who did? I had no desire to come, nor do I wish to remain. This house and its surroundings are unfamiliar to me. With your permission, I will retire. Before you go, I said, I should like to have you know something of the work we are doing, which may account for your coming. Well, sir, finding myself in this unfamiliar situation, I will not be lacking in courtesy, he said. For many years, I replied, I have been engaged in psychical research, with this psychic who sits opposite me, trying to obtain a practical solution of that great physical change called death. What has that to do with me? I am not dead nor am I interested in the subject, he answered. Wait a moment, please. You will be interested when I tell you that I have discovered something of the daily life and environment of the individual after he has ceased to be an inhabitant of the earth plane. You are entirely mistaken in your statements. There is no survival, no continuity of life. Death is the end. Are you sure? Absolutely, he replied. Suppose, I answered, I could prove to you here and now, that death, so-called, is but a physical change, the separation of the life force from the flesh garment, that substance with which it is clothed during its journey on this plane. Suppose I could demonstrate here and now that the individual has a spirit body composed of matter with form, features, and expression during his entire earth life, and at dissolution simply becomes an inhabitant of the next plane of consciousness with the same spirit body, is in short, the same identical man. There is no such thing as life after death, he said. I am going to try to explain what life is, before I give you the absolute proof of what I state. Now follow me. At the moment of conception, an atom of the universal force called good is clothed with substance vibrating more slowly than the life force clothed. The individual is as perfect at that moment as the giant oak in the heart of the acorn. We cannot see the individual or the oak tree before or after birth and growth. Life force vibrates so fast that it is not visible to the physical eye, but ultimately we see the outer covering, that substance which makes both possible. This outer garment of the individual is composed largely of water. The physical body of ours changes once in 7 years at least, but with such change we retain individuality, form, and feature. How is this done? I asked. I don't know, and I don't care, he answered. Follow me a little farther, please. This entity, this life force, this individuality, this soul, this us, if you like, is composed of matter, differing only from the flesh substance in its vibratory condition. This accounts for its permanency of form, but no physical eye ever saw or ever will see this self, this spirit form, this soul, so-called, unless possessed of the psychic sight with which, speaking generally, few are endowed. Without it one individual can never see the spirit form of another while an inhabitant of this earth. We are conscious only of physical expression, and sound. Now in dissolution from accident or physical weakness, the body covering that is visible to us is no longer fit for habitation, then the separation, dissolution, death so-called occurs. The individual through a natural process releases itself from the flesh garment, and stands forth the same man or woman as before, though invisible to the inhabitants of earth. They see but the old flesh body that housed the spirit. They could not, as I have said, see the true self before, nor can they see it after dissolution, because of the intensity, because of the rapidity of the vibration of the etheric body, for our eyes are limited as to motion, as well as to distance. That is all very well, but what has it to do with me? I am not dead, he answered. If you will be patient, I will lead up to the personal application. When one has gone through this death change, one of two conditions may follow. We may never for a moment lose consciousness. It is then just good night to the old and good morning to the new environment. This usually follows a respectable life. The man is the same still, nothing subtracted from or added to his personality, and in the mirror of nature he sees himself with the same outlines, the same expression, the same thoughts, the same attachments, still a material body dissociated from the flesh covering. The same spirit form that has been his during his journey in the world. But he then appreciates that his body is lighter and more transparent than the flesh substance he has been accustomed to look upon, and he does not resist muscular effort as he did in the old covering, then but for the assurance of friends and relatives who assist in the change, as at earth birth, and explain to the quickening consciousness, many would be afraid. There is this great difference in the two births. When this atom of life force first becomes individual, an inhabitant of the earth plane, it possesses instinct but no intelligence, it continues to develop, with no knowledge of its previous existence. It could have none, for it came from the mass of universal life forces. The next great change is similar except that the individual retains all previous development, he knows little more of the laws governing, and the means available to aid his progression than an infant. On the other hand, those who have led unclean earth lives, who have been selfish, immoral, and have committed crimes against man and nature, may not soon awaken. If they do, they find themselves in mental darkness, in a prison of their own building, and there they remain until a desire comes from within for better things. Then the way will be shown by spirit people engaged in such charitable work. At the beginning, each awakening spirit is told that each wrong act done in earth life must be lived over, that as he works he will encounter like conditions under which the wrong was done, and in the new life he must correct the error in the old in order to advance. I recall that an inhabitant of the next plane once said, "The justice that meets a naked soul on the threshold of the afterlife is terrible in its completeness. I cannot accept a word you say about a life after death. There is no other life, there can be none. A man dies like a dog," said the visitor. "That is true in a sense," I said, "for the life force and individuality both go on. You cannot destroy an atom of matter, you will admit, so if life force is matter, that cannot be destroyed." "This is all very strange talk, but why speak on such a subject to me? I am not dead. If I were and there is life beyond the grave, I should not be here talking to you. I have talked just as I am talking to you with many who have made that change," I said. "Do you mean to tell me you have talked to dead people?" "I did not say that, I said that I had talked to those who have made the change called death. There is, in reality, no death, there are no dead. Talk sense," he retorted. "We have all seen dead people, have seen their bodies buried, and you tell me there are no dead." Again I said, "You fail to understand what I have been telling you. We bury the physical bodies but not the spirit bodies. One is just as material as the other." "I don't comprehend you, and I don't care to continue the discussion. I think I will say good night. Just a moment, and I will demonstrate the fact. Did I not tell you a moment ago that I had talked with many so-called dead?" "Yes," he answered, "but I did not take what you said seriously. I made up my mind on that subject long ago. Now to begin the proof, do you know where you are at this moment? Tell me if you know." "I don't seem to know. This is not my home, the room is strange to me, you are strange too. It is all unreal. Can you explain the situation in which I find myself? Listen to me. This frail little woman, over 80 years old, who sits opposite me, is the most gifted psychic in the world. More than 20 years ago it was discovered that under favorable psychic conditions such as prevail tonight we could have speech with spirit people." "It can't be possible," he said. "The suggestion," I replied, "is so far beyond the experience of man, that I am not surprised at your inability to comprehend the fact. Wait. Having such means of communication, we have not only learned much of the future state, but, acting in conjunction with a group of people in the next life, we have been able to bring many to a state of consciousness, after the death change, in quasi-material, quasi-spiritual conditions, such as prevail here tonight, and when we are doing work of this character, many out of the body are brought for help by their friends, as you have been, that they may comprehend their situation. But I am not one of these. The suggestion is absurd, I tell you. I am as much alive as you, and my body is quite as substantial as yours," he said. "Hold up your hand as I do mine, and see if there is any difference between the two." "Yes," he answered, "there is a difference, I now discover. Yours is opaque, but mine is transparent. I can see right through my hand. Is this hypnotic suggestion?" "No," I said, "you are facing new conditions tonight. Do you know that we sit in intense darkness and cannot see you, although we hear your voice distinctly?" "I know," he answered, "that it is not dark, for I can see you, and if I can see you, you can see me, but never mind that. What is the matter with my body? I think now I have been very ill, and one always looks as I do after long sickness," he replied. "Speaking of illness, what do you recall about your last illness?" "My memory seems hazy, but it is coming back to me. I recall lying on a bed, the physician waiting, my wife and children sobbing. The doctor said, 'He is passing now.' That did give me a start. There were some who would like to see me dead, but I fooled them, for I did not die. If I had died, how could I be here? What do you know about death? I said. I don't know anything about it, and I don't want to. But when that time comes to you, you will be obliged to know, whether you desire to or not, I replied. Well, I'm willing to wait, and I don't want to talk about it. I never did. Suppose I tell you that you have already made that change. It would be foolish to tell me such a thing when I am here talking to you. Suppose I now prove it to you. Those in spirit life cooperate with me in this work and are often able to bring to the stranger those whom he has known in earth life, and face to face and voice to voice, the proposition proves itself. I tell you, he said, there are no dead people, and if there were, I don't want to see them. You are not afraid? No, he answered, but I don't want to see them. I have enough trouble with the living without bothering with the dead. Is there no one in the next life with whom you would like to talk if you could? Remember that your sickness may have ended in dissolution, your body is different, and you know you find yourself in a strange city. Things have changed, but I don't want to see or talk to dead people. You find life so material, so like the earth life, that I believe no method but actual experience will convince you that you have left the mortal state, and that lesson must be learned. You have been so intent on our conversation, I think that you have not looked around. Look, what do you see? My God! People, people, people. All strangers, and all looking at me, all with bodies like my own. What strange hallucination is this? Where am I? What am I? You are no longer an inhabitant of this world but are actually living in the afterlife. Are there none you know among those you see, who, to your knowledge, are counted among the dead, so called? I asked. Not one, but wait, there comes, John, my old partner. Why does he, of all men, come? He is dead. I helped bury him. I was his executor. Take him and that woman and the boy away. I won't see them, I tell you. They are dead, all dead. They are coming to arrest me. How can they, when they are all dead? Tell me, tell me, tell me quick. What wrong did you do? I asked. Wrong? Who said I did them any wrong? I was faithful to the trust. In answer, another spirit spoke. No, you were not faithful. You stole the money entrusted to you for my wife and child, and left them to suffer. There never was, and never can be a secret in the world. When you kept from my loved ones that which I left for their support and let them die in want, I saw, and all your friends in spirit life saw your act and the working of your mind. No secret in the world? My crime known. The dead alive. Have I, too, left my physical body to find life when I thought to find oblivion? Am I to meet all those I have wronged? I cannot face the future. Darkness is gathering. I am falling. God help me. The voice faltered, struggled for further speech, and was lost. The gross material that clothed his organs of respiration disintegrated, and he spoke no more. We had participated in one of the most remarkable experiences that it has been the privilege of man to have. We had talked with one who had left the physical body, and witnessed his awakening. Chapter 19. The imagination about me is the Canadian wilderness, vast and impenetrable. I have come across the American border into the forest as I always do when the days grow long. I am far from the trodden ways of men in a place where one can feel the heartbeat of the universe. In the splendid silence I am able to think deeply and clearly. The house of logs, surrounded by broad verandas, is built upon a point of land extending some little way into the lake. About the cabin, pines and silver birch trees give grateful shade when the sun is high. To the left are islands covered with hemlock and embracing vines. To the south and across the neck of the deep bay is the rock-bound shore of the mainland, and to the northwest there are woods and ragged rocks, lakes and rivers, and beyond, prairies just as nature left them before men came out of savagery. The winds, enriched among the trees with those properties that give health, sweep across the point on which the cabin stands on their way down the great valley of the St. Lawrence. Long deep breaths of such pure air fill one's blood with oxygen, purifying it till it grows red, and the nerve fluid ceases to be agitated. There are voices in these silent places. One may not understand them, But knowing that life were never found has intelligence, the fact of language must stand admitted. The furtive folk are no less dumb than the deaf-mute, yet who can say that they, denied a speaking tongue, do not communicate by motion with as much freedom as our own deaf-mutes. The ability to communicate each with the other is not denied the insect life or the furtive folk. The wild flowers upon the river bank, the reeds in the marshes, the young trees, children of the parent pine, and the oak and maple rearing their heads into the concave sky must have language or means of communicating with each other, otherwise the scheme of the universe is a failure. Why should life be created, allowed to develop and progress, and be denied speech? I cannot comprehend life in any form without language. With my conception of life force, the environment is wonderful. In the stillness of the night, the forest awakes. The lazy sound of bees, those workers of the day, is no longer heard. The gulls that have sailed through the blue sky from early morn searching for food have gone back into the little lakes, far from the presence of man, and rest on the bosom of the waters with their young. But the workers of the night are awaking. There is a splash, a mink is swimming around the point playing, there is a breaking of branches as the deer come down to drink. I hear a soft footfall, as the denizens of the forest range for food. Now comes the night song of the whippoorwill, and I feel in my face the wind made by the black bat's wings. The frogs croak and call to one another from pool and marsh and from the river bank, and then comes the stir among the trees and growing shrubs and embracing vines. No, I don't understand their speech, nor could I understand the speech of the ancient Chaldeans, but if they talked in my presence I should know it. I know that as the winds sough through trees and vines, swaying the branches and needles of the majestic pines, the sounds produced are as varying as the speech of man. How beautiful is the morning near to nature's heart! Every blade of grass that grows in the clearing as well as the undergrowth in the forest is wet with dew and glistens in the sun. All is still, the waters mirror the rocks and trees along the wooded shore, the loon gives a startled cry, goes down into the deep, and sets in motion upon the surface of the waters circles which we are told never cease. I went by canoe with my guide to explore some distant lakes. We had crossed the divide and fished in waters that had seldom mirrored the face of man, and as we glided along the indented shore, deer feeding in the rushes leapt from the water and disappeared. From the bushes a fox with cunning eyes and upraised foot watched us as we passed. From the deep, the black bay slept, and down in the clear waters the musk-lunge swam lazily over the bars. A dinner on the shore among the sturdy pines and hemlocks, the crackling fire, savory bacon and aromatic coffee to satisfy the appetite, made strong with effort, such was yesterday, and returning home as the sun disappeared in the golden west. Having taken a plunge in the waters of the lake, I sat down in a great chair on the veranda to rest. Soon the purple twilight came, and with it the silence like the benediction that falls between toil and sleep, and then the psychic hour when one sends his thoughts out into the great beyond. I was weary, and musing on the marvelous experiences that had been mine, my thoughts went out to my own, in the afterlife, and to the many new friends and acquaintances I have made among such people. There was harmony between the eye and brain, the tints between earth and sky become neutral. I looked lazily upon the waters, at the islands and down the long bay, and as I mused, there fell upon my senses music so distant as hardly to be perceptible. Was it music at all? I listened again, it seemed to be in a valley among the hills. I could not believe my senses, it was distinct yet not distinct. It sounded like a great orchestra of string and reed instruments played by master hands, and with it the gentle wind among the trees and all the voices of nature seemed to blend in one great whole. It approached with soft cadence and then receded, passing back into the silence where it was lost. Looking again, I saw that the harvest moon, which had just risen over the trees, made a bright and shining path across the lake. And as I watched the waters play and sparkle in that light, I was astonished to see a bridge from the farther shore across the narrow bay leading straight to the point on which my cabin stood. It was as perfect in outline as the one suspended across Niagara's gorge, with the exception that while definite in outline, it was light and almost transparent. The entire structure seemed made of soft, filmy, Radiant material, definite yet indefinite. As I watched, I saw someone approaching over the bridge. Soon I beheld the outline of a woman's form, and beside her a young boy, holding her hand. Was this a dream? Startled, I aroused myself, and beads of perspiration came out upon my forehead. I felt the chair and tightened my hold. I looked up and dimly saw the stars and constellations in the sky, and the islands in the lake. I saw again the bridge of light and those who were coming nearer. I shut my eyes, and all the moonlight, the waters, and the islands in the waters were blotted out, all gone but the bridge of light and those who were upon it. I was alone in this great forest. Afraid? One asks. Yes, at first, until I appreciated that I saw not with the physical eye, but through my senses. I was looking into the invisible. I had come to know long ago that the dead so-called were my friends, so there was naught to fear, and I waited for their coming. So distinct was the woman that I saw her dress of white flowing garments like the Greeks wore in the days of Pericles, then her face, and as it became visible, I half started to my feet, for it was the smiling face of my mother. I observed her features, and how her hair fell in folds about her ears. Her face was just as in the old days, except that age and the lines of care had disappeared, and as I looked she seemed to know that I had recognized her and had noticed the child. As the two came nearer, a light different from anything I had ever seen shone in the child's face and through his hair. He waved his hand laughing, and still the two came toward me in the path of the moonlight. I realized that I was having an experience entirely new and that it was important to make my observations with great care. I took long deep breaths and waited. My mother and the child reached the point on which the bridge rested and stepped upon the shore, and up the sandy path toward the cabin, so near now that every detail of face and form was visible, and I knew the child was my son, who went out into the afterlife in infancy, but who had now grown to about the age of 5 years. My pulse was beating fast, as my heart pounded under the excitement. I was no longer composed, for all my love and longing for my mother and my son swept over me. I started to my feet and down the steps to meet those who came with laughing eyes and smiling lips, my hands outstretched, but as I touched them, they seemed to dissolve and were gone. I was upon the shore alone, the soft wind stirred the branches. I walked down to the water which was still sparkling in the path of the moonlight, but the bridge was gone, and those who came upon it. This had been no dream, for not for one moment had I slept, nor did sleep come before the dawn crept into the eastern sky. Experiences little less strange come to others. While Mr. W., we will call him, one of the most brilliant lawyers in America, was examining a woman as a witness in the trial of an action some months ago in the courthouse in Buffalo, she gasped, fell back in her chair, and was dead. Mr. W., wholly without imagination and painfully material, told me, and I have not the slightest doubt of his veracity, that when he saw his client gasp and fall back in her chair, he rushed towards her, and as he did so, he saw, and plainly saw, a shadow-like substance having the form and outline of the witness emerge from the body and move away. I cite this fact to show that others have had experiences similar to my own, though perhaps not so perfect in detail. Months have elapsed since I sat upon the veranda about the log cabin in the Canadian wilderness and saw the etheric bridge and two of the inhabitants of the afterlife, but the impression, the memory, will never be dimmed in the years to come. Today it is more distinct than any incident of my life, and now you ask, as I have asked, what was it? At a subsequent time when occasion was presented, I asked a member of our spirit group to give an explanation of what had occurred. In answer he said, I am familiar with the occurrence because I was present. It was an object lesson. We wanted you to see something of the actual conditions prevailing in this afterlife, as you call it, so that you could more clearly describe it, and through you, others could obtain some little appreciation of what waits beyond the physical. Before I answer your question in detail, I want to say again, and it cannot be repeated too often, that the body that you see and touch is but the housing, or garment worn by another body, the etheric or spirit body, which is just as much substance as the flesh, but so refined, intense, and so high in vibration that the physical eye cannot see it or the hand feel it. Now in death, so-called, the etheric body leaves the physical housing, ceases to live on the physical plane, and becomes an inhabitant of this plane where everything is etheric, matter simply vibrating more rapidly than such substance as is seen ordinarily by men.